darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Well, good evening, America. Alex McFarland here on the American Family Radio Network, and we have got an incredible show. I'm very honored to be sitting in tonight for attorney, journalist, pastor Abe Hamilton III, as I frequently do. Great honor. And, you know, we've had a lot of guests and done some shows I'm pretty proud of. Very pleased with the people and the content that we have the privilege of sharing. But tonight, I do not overstate the case at all that this may be one of the most significant shows you hear in many a day. You're going to hear some very consequential content regarding your money, the economy, and all of our futures. And to help us talk about things like crypto and tariffs and the stock market and central bank digital currency, CBDC, so many things you're hearing in the news. Tonight, to weigh in on these topics and more, Christian Briggs of Hard Asset Management. He is a leader in the financial sector. He is a consultant for the White House and this administration, renowned for his financial prowess, but also his absolute dedication to integrity and ethical business practices. You talk about China. He knows China. He's run business over there. He, like myself, is very concerned about the national debt and whether or not our nation defaults on the debt. And just the way that we've been spending recklessly, wasting money. Here we are, such a profitable, prosperous nation, and we should not be in the financial duress that we actually are in. And so a voice of reason and a pathway toward responsible management of our assets nationally and personally. I'm very privileged to speak tonight with Christian Briggs of Hard Asset Management, Inc. Mr. Briggs, thank you so much for making time to be with us today. And thank you for what you do for our country.
Well, first of all, thanks for being so gracious to put me on your show. A lot of people today don't want to hear what the truth is. There's an old saying in some of the communist countries, it's better to tell them a warm lie than give them the cold truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, America not being anywhere near that, but we still sometimes want to fall back on, well, I just don't want to know what the reality is, whether it's the debt, whether it's the economy in general, politics, corruption. But I think that the more we know, the more value and the benefit to our overall standard of living is. And as believers, we take that insight that's given to us, God-given insight, and we try to put that into real world terms. What does that mean? The action item. So I'm just glad to be here. It's a very big honor to be with so many believers. Your show is huge, obviously. And so whatever I can do to give insight and inspiration on here's what's coming, here's what you can do, I'm happy to do it.
Why do you think so many people nowadays, they get themselves into so much debt, credit card debt, they live beyond their means? Why do you think so many people nowadays just don't know how to responsibly handle money?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't get asked that much. So let's talk about human behavior.
And what is the responsible handling of money?
Again, it's a good question because there's two parts. They always said it's very hard to become a millionaire. I don't think it's as hard as today. Certainly might have been 40, 50 years ago. But even so, success is measured on a couple of different levels. But the hardest thing, I think, and when you achieve that milestone of success is keeping the money. I think it's easier to make it, but it's much harder to be able to garner a disciplined mentality on either keeping it by just savings account or keeping it and investing it. It seems to slip through our fingers. So let's talk about why could that be. And it's not everybody, obviously. There's a lot of good people that out there that know how to save. But let's talk about your question. You know, when you grow up with nothing and you have something, it tends to be one of those things that you don't have such a grasp on the understanding of the value of what that is, because you never had it. So it's kind of one of those momentary things where, oh, I have it now, but if I spend it on clothes or cars, you know, it's okay. I'll make the money and continuously make it and have it, and I'll just grow my wealth that way. And we got to realize that the money that is given to us, we got to be good stewards of that, custodians of that money, because it's really not ours. But in saying that, I think what you have is you have a general understanding that credit for the last 40 years up till the last 2-3 years was a declining cost. So think about that. The cost of money for 40 years was declining. So that gave us the go-to feeling. We can do anything. It's going to continue. I once said this, and I don't know if it was well received into a few members of Congress. I said, you guys have been giving money away from helicopters since literally the late 80s. And we have basically been willing to accept that money without understanding that this is recoverable money. In other words, it's like when you borrow money at 2%. You know, you still got to pay the debt. Now, of course, that's a very low interest rate. But at the end of the day, when we are achieving high standards or high levels of credit and living to a standard, we have to pay that back. It's not free, even though some people think it's free and it's going to continue forever. I think the greatest perpetuated scam on anybody, American people around the world, was COVID money. This was money that is like a non-recourse loan. It was a non-recourse loan. And I read the stories, and I'm sure you did too, Alex, how many people received hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, and thought, well, I'll get my, they came in like, what, 2 tranches, 3 tranches. So they thought, oh, it's going to keep coming. It's going to keep fulfilling what I need financially. And when the money stopped, well, guess what happened? A lot of them didn't get back into the same business world and made the same kind of money. So they were living on credit cards. The discipline that we must have when we achieve any milestone of success, whether it's 100,000 in the bank or 100 million, is two things. One, appreciate where it came from, maintain the consistency of where you're getting it, and keep that business model going. If it's a one-time thing or a continuation of your business, great. The second thing, which is very important, do you have 2 or 3 years worth of cash in the bank in case something detrimental happens to your livelihood? You got to maintain that. And unfortunately, the Biden administration, through their very, very poor fiscal policies, I mean, their national foreign policy was terrible. You know, it's just bad. But let's talk about the fiscal policy. So now you have this inflation that the bottom half of America, they're basically starving to death. Their wages haven't even come close to keeping up, Alex, with the cost of living. So we're finding that credit card debt and then the associated cost of borrowing that money on credit cards is horrific. It's up to what, 35-40%, depending upon the bank that issues the cards. There is no way people are going to be able to pay back those types of interest rates in a manner that's consistent with maintaining their credit, because credit card debt hit an all-time high. And when you go against a savings account and you go against your other debt like car loans, okay, boat loans, home loans, HELOC, anything like that, guess what happens? They don't have the increasing capabilities of the wages to maintain those levels of debt. So people, for all intents and purposes, to go back to your original question, it was too cheap of money that was received too easily in credit.
Yeah. Wow. Christian, do you know what percentage of American households are insolvent?
Well, I'll kind of give you a number that would be the closest to answer your question. Let's talk about Trump first and his first term. When he walked into the White House in 17, 52% of America was not active in the labor force, which means they just didn't pay taxes. Now, they lived usually on entitlement programs, whether federal, state, local, fully, or some kind of a indirect or direct subsidies to their income and their lifestyle. They had no tax base. When he left office, even with COVID, he brought that 52% down to 47%. He lifted more minorities out of what I consider to be the lower income bracket to a middle income, and took people that weren't even in the bracket to a bracket, right? They weren't even in the tax base and got them. So he was one of the greatest presidents in the history of the United States to be able to go to the money, whether it was the African-American, the Latino, it didn't matter. This guy did a lift. Let's talk about Joe Biden walking in. So that 47%, by the time Joe Biden left last year, guess what? We were looking at a 62%. You know why? Because he gave away free money, dependency. If I was to send a check to every American, $10,000 every month, the incentive to work would be, well, not zero, but pretty close to zero for the majority of the people. Okay?
Sure.
Say for what it is. So now we're at a 62%. When Joe Biden took office, the participation in the labor force, but yet people had less than $1,000 in the bank, was 70%. But when he left office, 80% of America is living paycheck to paycheck with less than $1,000 cash liquid. Okay? That's how bad those policies were. You'd almost have to think to yourself, was it willfully done? Did they set Trump up in case he was to win the election? Did they set him up with an economy that looks to be, as in the words of our Secretary of Treasury, we're facing the worst financial crisis in U.S. history, far greater than the 08 markets? And that's a question that we may never specifically be able to answer with 100% certainty, but it sure looks like that. The duck is walking, the duck is quacking, it must be a duck. So I'm going to leave it at that point. But to go back again, it's about 80% of America lives paycheck to paycheck or has less than $1,000, give or take a few bucks, liquid in the bank. That's the worst statistical number in the history of the United States. They were better off during the Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think about this. And by the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, Alex McFarland here on the American Family Radio Network, very honored to glean from the wisdom of Christian Briggs. We've got so much to talk about. We've got just a wonderful window of time to learn from this man. Christian, before we go too much farther, and I've got so many financial and governmental questions I want to pose to you, but websites, where may people find you online, follow what you're doing and your content?
Well, thanks for asking. So I have a podcast show called The Hard Asset Money Show, which you can go on YouTube for the video version, Spotify and Apple for the audio version. And then on X, you can follow us at BMC_HAM, and our website is bmcham.com. Being one of the largest precious metals dealers in the United States, my team, we've been in business for 40 years. It's given us the ability to follow the trends. And what we're seeing right now is the government, let's just talk about the debt, if that's okay with you, Alex.
Okay.
Since that's the three topics right now that are trending the most between Search, X, and other media platforms, is the debt, or the national debt, the long-term liability debt. It's almost one and the same. We're going to talk about that. But really, it's also about gold, and it's also about digital currency with the Senator Hagerty from Tennessee with his Genius Act, which is introducing digital asset stable coins. And then, of course, Congressman French Hill in the House, who introduced their version of the bill to transition from paper currency to digital currency. But the debt, it's not sustainable. In fact, if you do the math on it, and unless something drastic happens with the fiscal policies, and I'm talking about trillions of dollars immediately in government spending, the sustained method of spending, and it's a method, right? It's like a business. You have a clear path to understanding what your revenues are and what your expenditures. We are going to default before Trump takes office. We will literally be in bankruptcy. We're technically bankrupt. Bankruptcy is not—
Before Trump leaves office, you mean?
Correct. When Trump leaves office, correct, at the end of his first term. See, bankruptcy is defined at a very clear understanding. It doesn't mean that you're not able to bring in revenues, that all business has ceased to exist. It means that your revenues, or let's just call it your assets, are far less. Your debts exceed those assets by a multiple margin. Well, fast forward, here we are. If this is a private corporation, I think the shareholders would have put us in voluntary, some type of a reorganization or just liquidation bankruptcy.
Yeah, sure. Hey, we've got to take a brief break. Alex McFarland here. You know, money, the way we handle money, is a character issue, really. It's a spiritual issue, too. I'm so honored that we have with the show tonight Christian Briggs of Hard Asset Management. We're going to talk more because, look, this impacts all of us. The money, the economy, the nation, our future. Stay tuned. The Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio Network is back after this brief break. Don't go away.
What is DEI and why is it antithetical to truth? DEI teaches people to view themselves and others primarily through the lens of race, gender, or social status. As Christians, our call is not diversity for diversity's sake, but to proclaim Christ, calling people into unity through the power of the gospel. I'm Jenna Ellis, and you can read my article, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, A Truthful Definition, on thestand.net.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Alex McFarland here, by the way. We've got a lot going on in our world, and my website is alexmcfarland.com. And we've got Dinesh D'Souza. He was a policy analyst under Ronald Reagan, and he's speaking for us May 4th in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And if we're doing a speaker series called Conversations That Matter. So if you go to my website, alexmcfarland.com/conversations, we're bringing in Charlie Kirk later in the summer. You know, it's all about God and country, and really all of us have an opportunity and, frankly, a responsibility to be the citizens that are the solution to the country. It's ultimately the hand of God, but each one of us can play a role in telling the truth and living right and helping our country stay on track. So check out my website, if you would, alexmcfarland.com/conversations, and we'd love to have you there May 4th to hear Dinesh D'Souza. You know, one of the other voices that, frankly, I believe God has raised up, and I was so blessed to learn from this man, Christian Briggs. He is playing a role in our government, but he for many years has led hard asset management, and he's helping a lot of people, myself included, learn wisdom when it comes to finances. And Christian, I grew up in a very political family, and my parents, you know, campaigned for Reagan and were very much grassroots volunteers. I remember in 1981, my mother and dad were just so upset that the national debt hit, gasp, $1 trillion. That was 1981. And my parents, you know, I was young, I didn't understand it, but they were just freaking out that the national debt in 1981 was $1 trillion. Now, fast forward to the present moment. I know it's, what, in the high 30s. What is the national debt right now, Christian?
Well, you got two debts, okay?
Okay.
We have what they call the top line national debt. Top line being the debt that everybody's associated with, the number $37 trillion. But we have to be a little bit more understanding of the real debt. It's the long-term liabilities, which are no longer able to be pushed further down. And you cannot negate these. These are liabilities that you must pay. So you have credit card debt. Let's call that the national level. You have mortgage debt, which is the long-term liability. So the national debt at $36.7 trillion and accumulating $8 billion a day. Like, this is a day.
And I'm sorry, it sounded like you said $8 billion a day?
Sure, do the math. Yeah, we're going to end up increasing our national. Listen to this. This is the boy gets good. Our revenues are $5 trillion this year, top line revenues for the United States government. Okay. As somebody who studied both physics and economics for over 30 years, both quantum and quantitative, these are derivative models that we build that are conclusive. It's like kind of like saying 2 + 2 = 4. That's conclusive. Now, you can change the variables, but I can show you how to get to 4 again. Go to 3 + 1. That's 4. How about 4 ones? That's 4. You can change the variables, but the outcome is always the same when you're using mathematics. See, I always said this. People lie, but math doesn't. So let's talk about math. All right, let's go here. All right, now, if I have a $5 trillion a year income, not bad, I mean, that's a lot of money, okay, as a country, and I have a $37 trillion debt, my debt servicing number is $2.4 trillion this year. We're gonna service the debt. If the 10-year treasury stays elevated over 4% to 4.25%, right now it's at 4 1/3, The $9 trillion of old debt that's coming due this coming summer will go from 2% to 4.25%, even maybe 4.5%. Now, all of a sudden, you're talking $2.4 trillion going into this year and now into fiscal 26, which starts October 1st. You're now looking at $7.4 trillion, the $5 trillion we've got in revenues, the $2.4 in interest that we have to have. See, the $5 trillion in revenues that we have, that's already spent. Excluding the interest on the debt, here's what you got. You have an explosion in Social Security. You have almost 20,000 people a day going on Social Security. I'm not quite, but close to it. In 23, we had 5.8 new recipients of Social Security benefits, whether it's disability, retirement, it's kind of a mixture of both. Well, that's about 1,800 a month back then. Now it's about 1,900 a month. And last year we had about 4 million people go on Social Security. We're blowing through almost 70 million people. So when you start to think about the growth in entitlements, this year we're going to spend over $2 trillion on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Hey, chalk up another almost $2 trillion on those. Hey, how about that military spending? $1 trillion on that. You're done. What's left? That's $5 trillion. You got no other money for all the other government agencies, which are got 450. I think the last count was about 450. So no wonder Trump is slashing and burning everything he can. The problem that we have is we're still adding $8 billion a day between debt and interest on the debt. That's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And partisan politics aside, I mean, to your knowledge, have the Democrats in a reasonable, realistic, responsible way, have they addressed this? Do they care about it? Or are they willfully, maliciously wanting the economy to crash just to look bad on Republicans, conservatives, specifically Donald J. Trump?
Okay, that's a really good question. You almost have to be, well, let me take a step back. Years ago, I was talking to somebody and I said, one day we're going to be able to prove there are truly walking brain donors, donors of the brain, but yet still able to viably work and live and breathe somehow. Last administration proved to me, I don't think they just understood fiscal policy in the first part of it. And the most of them on the back end toward the end, when they realized Trump's probably going to win, started to literally be detrimental to the economy. And let me kind of expand on those, on that, on what I just said. I think in the beginning, the first 2 years, obviously they were giving away money, COVID, you had this, they thought this is gonna be a robust economy, we're gonna be able to maintain the consistency of growth. They lied about the employment numbers. All the long-term, larger, I call it the larger portion of all the jobs creation was actually inflated, and the ones that they netted back down were government. The rest of them were just part-time stuff within the private sector. So I think there was a move in the first 2 years to try to build an economy that was sustainable to push through the second half of the administration last year, Biden, and then be able to push them into a second term. Once they realized that the economy was much worse off with the debt, the interest rates, the inflation, which affected all of their various fiscal policies, they kind of just said, the heck with it. If we got the power of the pen, let's absolutely and immediately, let's jump, okay, let's go to just spending as much as we can. It doesn't matter. It's kind of like a non-recourse loan. There was no recourse to it. So they just said, the heck with it, we're going to spend away. If we win, we'll figure it out later. But if we don't win and we lose to Trump, well, guess what? We're handing this guy a financial bag of rocks. So that's what they did. They, in that last year, even like the last 90 days, even before he took actually the oath of office, they were spending billions a day, spending money we didn't have in order to be able to move aggressively to package up what now has become, in the words of our Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent, one of the worst financial crises we're facing in well, U.S. history. So I think it may have been deny it in the first 2 years. We don't need to worry about it. We're going to build it up. The second 2 years are like, oh boy, what have we done? There's no way to pay this back. So let's just spend between the omnibus bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the infrastructure. I mean, these people spend $7 trillion between dedicated money now and dedicated money that's already got to be spent, that was already in the bills for another 10 years. It was crazy money. And I said to somebody in Congress when this was all going down last year, I said, do you think they even worry about the balance in the checkbook and the repercussions of the debt? And the answer was, no, they don't care.
There's no reason to.
And you know, I think about this. By the way, I'm hearing an echo. I don't know why. I don't know why I hear an echo. Maybe we can mute that or something. But let me try to get this echo ameliorated. Yeah, there we go. Can you hear me now, Christian?
Oh yeah, perfect.
Yeah, good. You know, what? Only God knows the heart of another person. I don't know if Schumer and Pelosi and Obama and Biden and Kamala, I don't know if they were willfully, maliciously trying to wreck the economy to make it look bad on Trump. I think they probably were. Let's just set that aside for a moment. What is the hope? Do you believe that in this administration in Washington, is there the ability and the willingness to take the hard but necessary steps to short-term and long-term save the American economy, and in doing so, save the nation?
Yeah, there is. Yes, absolutely. Trump has a heart for this country. I mean, this guy's heart's big enough to probably drive a semi through. I mean, this guy's got a bigger heart than I think I've ever personally experienced, in the way in which he sacrificed so much for really no gain of his own personal
Literally took a bullet for this country.
That's what I'm saying. He took the ultimate. He, you know, it's like they always said. He took the he was willing to take what needed to be done in order to garner a result that would be beneficial to the entire country. And people don't think like that much anymore. But in saying that, I think what you got to remember is this: we have great intentions, but when we're handed something that has a marginal chance of winning, you have to take drastic steps. It doesn't mean you can't accomplish the mission, okay? I mean, look, we've seen military operations where single sniper shooters or single military special ops have done amazing things for different wars, from World War II to present to all the way back to Civil War. We have great people, men and women, that have sacrificed so much that they have actually been able to accomplish a mission. But the question you have to ask yourself, this is a fiscal one. This isn't about finding a person or trying to find a target. If there is a target and you want to kind of take that connotation over this, the target is, how do we not default? Now, a couple different things that are showing that the default is more likely than not, or a prepackaged bankruptcy, or even a prepackaged roll-up of the debt into some other systematic agency, like throwing it over to the Federal Reserve. Gold is showing that we are in trouble. Remember, gold goes up before a catastrophic event. If you go back to all the way 150 years, it shows absolutely, it's the only asset that shows movement before the bad news hits. It's the rumor mill stock, I call it the rumor mill stock, the one you want to buy. The news is when you sell it. But at the end of the day, what Trump's facing is twofold. Okay, let's go into detail here. He's facing an $8 trillion debt. Okay, when I say debt, that means he needs $5 trillion in revenues. He needs to increase GDP, lower taxes, higher revenue on tax base. The problem is the taxes are going to start going down if we hit a recession. Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve today, did say that the economy is definitely slowing, but the inflation numbers are not coming down in such a way that they could justify cutting interest rates. So now we're going to stay at some elevated interest rates with a declining economy. That means lower tax revenue. How much tax revenue is going to drop? That's the question. Because remember, DOGE has already been able to find about $200 billion a year in savings, but that savings could be limited depending upon the economy's strength or the economy's weakness. So if the savings is $200 billion, but our tax revenue drops $500 billion because of lower GDP and lower economic indicators that are already showing this, our net is still going to be $300 billion on the wrong side of the equation. So he's got to do a fine line. If you lower the dollar's value, you can increase inflation, which is bad, but you lower the dollar, then all of a sudden our manufacturing jobs becoming very attractive here because it lowers the cost of doing business by foreign currencies or foreign governments, foreign companies. So that's a plus. But he's got to maintain a very fine line between inflation, interest rates, and still the revenues without increasing the debt too much. But he's going to have to spend In our term right now, this year, this term, we're looking at about $2 to $2.5 trillion in expenditures that go with interest and then just really meeting the needs of the government's promises. So it's a fine line that I would say that only a handful of people in the world would be able to be successful at it. If there is one person that would be successful at getting us out of this quagmire, it's Donald J. Trump, Amen. The business. Amen. Look at what he did in the late 80s, early 90s. This guy had less than $2 million in the bank. He had a real estate empire that was on the verge of collapse. He had about a dozen banks that were like, look, where's our money? He goes, look, you can do one of two things here. Okay, you can either foreclose and you can own these assets. Good luck selling them. Or you can loan me another $1 billion and I'll get us out of this with time. And guess what happened? That was in the late 80s, early 90s. And guess what? It worked. So it's really about leveraging the value of your knowledge with the banks, in this case, governments or private investment, to be able to weather the storm enough to lower the rates, to be able to systematically put together a debt repayment plan. The only thing is, the long-term liabilities now exceed $107 trillion. You can't get out of that. That is Social Security benefits, I would say the majority of it is, but then Medicare and Medicaid go along with that, because if you have Social Security, you're gonna have Medicare. If you have Medicare, you're gonna have Medicaid. And so you've got that, and then you got military spending, which is going to increase at least 4 or 5% per year, because now we're taking on China and Russia, which they've increased their budgets. So we had to maintain some consistency in increasing our budget so we can have innovation both in software, hardware, and military applications, and such as ships and satellites and missiles and radar and drones and anti-drones and lasers. So you're going to have to stay innovative in order to be able to be the powerhouse, okay? One, to be competitive in any application. In this case, it's military. So you're gonna have incremental increase. The question is, will tax cuts, okay, that's one, will lowering the interest rates free up credit so that increases overall GDP be enough? Because Social Security is killing us. There's no question about it. It was a bad plan under Roosevelt. It's been a bad plan ever since. So we're gonna have to revamp the method of which we collect those taxes and how we apply those taxes down the road. I think Trump's going to be like any other president. He's going to come up with something new. I would say he does a personal type investment account. And if we do that, it's been mathematically shown that we can get out of the Social Security liability business within 10 to 15 years, and especially if we lower taxes on some of these other areas.
Hold that thought. Forgive me for interrupting. Christian Briggs, we're talking about the economy. Alex McFarland here. We've got to take a break. Don't go away. When we come back, we'll talk about tariffs. Stay tuned.
Gossip. It isn't easy to kick. Who doesn't want the insider info? Who wouldn't want to be the bearer of this week's most exclusive whisper? How then do we bless the name of the Lord when we were just cursing his child? How do we bear his name while we so flippantly defame his very likeness? So put on the full armor of God and let one of us who is without sin throw the first stone. I'm Lauren Bragg, and you can read Gossip and the Gospel on thestand.net.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Christian Briggs. Listen carefully, folks. I want to give some of his online presence, bmcham.com. B-M-C-H-A-M, as in hard asset management, bmcham.com. And then on X, a.k.a. Twitter, at BMC_HAM, Ham on Twitter, and then Hard Asset Money Show on YouTube. You can be sure I'm going to be listening to that. I'm learning a lot. By the way, Alex McFarland here. If you recognize my voice, it's probably because of the live five-day-a-week show on the American Family Radio Network, Exploring the Word. We've been on more than 15 years, some 3,000 shows, and we invite you to listen in. And we're on Facebook as well, Exploring the Word. One last bit of commercial. We have Dinesh D'Souza on May 4th. Myrtle Beach. Now, you know, I'm all over the nation. I'm in a pulpit somewhere, a conference, a camp, a church, somewhere every weekend of the year. But we're doing a speaker series this summer in Myrtle Beach, the number one resort city in America. 17.2 million people a year from all 50 states go there. And they've got a music industry, kind of like Branson, Missouri. And I've rented the Alabama Theater, the Greg Rolls Theater. We're bringing in Charlie Kirk. We're bringing in Lauren Green from Fox News. We're bringing in Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh made the incredible movie. You've got to watch it. And I've known Dinesh 18 years. He is brilliant, an Ivy League. He is truly a great Christian American, served in the Reagan White House. He did a movie called Vindicating Trump that I would urge you to watch. You know, if you're maybe you're one of these, you're just not so sure about Donald Trump or not. I've met Trump. I've been in many phone call with faith leaders, with President Trump on the phone. I've spoken with him personally. You need to see Dinesh's movie, Vindicating Trump. But also, if you want to hear him in person, just he is brilliant. May 4th, so it's coming up, you know, in just a month and a half, I'll have Dinesh at the Greg Rolls Theater. He's part of my summer speaker series, Conversations That Matter. And you can learn more about that, alexmcfarland.com/conversations. And we would love for you to come out and get equipped because as Christian Briggs is teaching us, you know, these are tough times. No time to panic, but it is time to have a clear head, be informed, have our house in order. And I thank the Lord that God has raised up Christian Briggs to help our government get its house in order. Christian, I want to talk about tariffs, but before we do, I want to give you a chance to finish. Before the break, you were talking about a plan going forward, and I also, with just this one segment left, I want you to give us some homework assignment about, you know, getting our house in order, having our house in order. If, as you say, you know, gold goes up just before an economic crisis, you know, there are probably, you know, countless people listening right now, and they think, you know, millions, billions, thousands. Look, I'm dealing with hundreds of dollars, not millions of dollars. What advice do you have for us in getting our house in order? And may God also grant that our government gets its financial house in order. But moving forward, what advice do you have for us?
Two things. The number one thing that people need to do is they have to look at their debt to income ratio. You always want to have no more than 50% of your net income servicing your debt. That was also your monthly expenses. You really got to, if you're making $100,000 a year and you have about an $8,000+ a month after taxes, let's say you have six, your cumulative cost of living should really not exceed $3,000 to $4,000 per month. You always want to have about 15 to 20% of your net income into savings. Now, one thing to make a note is that gold, again, even though we do deal in it, we don't want to try to make it sound like it's the only investment, but actually since 2000, it just was made known today that it outperformed the S&P 500 during that period from 2000 to current. So we like to think that people should diversify. Yeah, you got equities, you have bonds, real estate. A lot of people have it in their home, so that's good. And then you have gold because obviously it's gone up, what, 60% in the past 2 years, where the equity markets haven't even come close to that. So we know that it does move aggressively prior to something, and that something is always bad news. So as we try to transition from a lot of the, I call it the helicopter money and the low interest rates that we've been so fortunate to have for over 40 years to higher rates, less liquidity, higher cost of borrowing, higher cost of living with inflation, gold is obviously helping to create a wealth where systematically some of the other assets, I call it soft assets, are now starting to decline. So you always got to have a diversified, you know, 20% of your money should be, of your investment capital long-term, should be in precious metals.
So that's good advice, good advice. How can people, you say, you know, debt servicing, no more than 50% of our monthly income should go to that. Now, a mortgage, a car loan. What about, you know, groceries, the light bill, the phone bill? Do you consider that debt or just monthly overhead for a household?
That's just monthly. Yeah, that's monthly overhead. That's good. I think you're what we call our fixed debt, which is usually just mortgage, car payment, insurance, the little things like that, should really not exceed 50 to 60% of your net income. The rest of it is going to be ancillary items like groceries, and that'll fluctuate. You have other utilities, which will fluctuate. You have travel, or you have some kind of a leisure. There's always going to be variables, and sometimes you cut back a little bit. But the one thing to remember is don't ever use a credit card and finance a vacation. Now, you can, when I say finance, it means you want to say, I'm going to pay it off over a year. Don't do that. If you can't pay cash for the vacation within a reasonable short time, usually 90 days from the time you take that vacation, that's okay to have a couple, 3 months to pay it off. But if it takes a whole year, that's bad business, because your interest on that debt can inflate and magnify the cost of that much more than what people realize. So again, I'm not here to say that you can't do that. I'm just saying to be prudent about it and to be very frugal about the way in which you spend that money and try to maintain the consistency of savings is that you should really think about more short-term liability debt payoff. And when it comes to vacations, never take a year or two. I mean, I know people that, I spent $20,000 going on vacation. It took me a year to pay it off, and I'm about to do it again. And I go, no, it didn't take you $20,000. It took you longer than that. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, go to look at the interest you paid on that. Another $10,000, I think, was what my buddy told me. And he's like, oh boy. So these are things that you got to kind of think about. Where could that extra 10 grand in interest go? Well, if you're married, I mean, that could be college money. That could be extra cash in the bank. It could be a little bit of gold, a little bit of money towards your debt on your mortgage.
Pay off things your like house.
Absolutely. And I think that once you realize that we are stewards of this money, it's not really ours. So the more we give to a rational, and I say this, rational thinking, okay, just rational thinking of fiscal policy in our own households, the more we're going to get. Plus, it gives the family a lot of secure feelings that we're doing what's needed to be done to ensure that when the bad times, hard times, or any time comes, you've got that liquidity, you've got that growth, and you've got the asset you need it when in time calls for it in case something happens. They'll lose the job or unseen costs. You always want to have some cash on hand.
So let's talk about tariffs. You know, Christian, down in the South, I used to hear the grownups talk about found money, you know, maybe a revenue stream that was untapped. And they would say, okay, that's found money. Are tariffs found money for our nation?
Well, they sure can be. Absolutely. Yeah. Tariffs are a method to negotiate at the table to create an absolute level playing field. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to use them to undermine our customers or, in this case, our business partners, in a sense, other countries like China, India, Mexico, Canada. We do have trade relations that must be maintained. But we're going to have a $1.3 trillion trade deficit, the majority of which, not all of it, but a big chunk of it is going to be with China. They're not our partners in many ways, but they are a way of which that we need to make things that lower the cost of everyday things here, so it maintains a lower average inflationary environment. So when we talk about China, their method is to destroy the U.S.'s financial system by destroying the dollar. They've been doing that by sucking $800 billion, $900 billion a year away from us, $700 billion in some cases of a trade deficit. So for example, Alex, you and I decide, you know, we're gonna do business together. I'm gonna buy from you $1,000, you're gonna buy from me $1,000, both of which are products that neither one of us have. So it's a good relationship. Now all of a sudden I say, Alex, you're not buying as much from me as I'm buying from you, and you're manipulating your currency, or you're doing this, you're doing that, you're doing things in which that would give you a unfair advantage. In when China entered the World Trade Organization, you're not allowed to do that. Well, China, the day they did it, they started manipulating their currency. They brought it down so their widgets, whatever the manufacturing items are, became less expensive than American manufacturing. And two, which was really bad, they started dumping products on our shores for below cost, called predatory selling.
Yeah.
Well, no. See, Trump's a master at understanding the variables of the deal. And he loves to negotiate and waits to the last minute, like any good businessman would, to negotiate the final details of a deal. And that's what you want. You want to be able to get everyone at the table and they're exhausted, they're tired. So the tariffs, by definition, are very good ways of which to bring everyone to the table and say, hey, You're buying $1 billion from me, but I'm buying $2 billion from you. We're not doing that anymore. You're going to buy $2 billion from me. I'll buy $2 billion from you of needed items. These are needed things back and forth. So they're critical to infrastructure and economy. So they are good things, but we're going to level the playing field. And the tariffs are going to do that. Now, is it going to happen next week? No. The tariffs could kick in today in the biggest way, and the results will not be seen for at least 6 to 12 months. But remember, Trump as a man and the businessman has had the ability to maintain the consistency of what he's done in a private sector when he built all these huge towers and hotels. Look at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue. It's amazing. Wasn't built in a week, though. It would take time. Very successful. So he knows the art of the deal. So what he's going to do is he's going to continue to negotiate to the last second, the last drop of the lemon, to ensure the viability of the deal goes in our favor, at least at the playing field. And then Made in America, our quality is second to none. Made in America is the good housekeeping seal of approval. We will win not based on price. We will win on quality. And that's what's coming. So when the tariffs kick in, so does Made in America, and so does those manufacturing jobs.
So, though, you know, like in Canada, I've seen, Christian, on the news, okay, the shelves are empty of American products. What about the retaliation? And, of course, the left is saying, oh, my goodness, this is destroying diplomatic relations with, you know, countries. Let me ask you this way. Do you feel like there are leaders and citizens that have the maturity and the patience to wait for the benefits of the tariffs to manifest themselves?
No question. Let's talk about Canada. Who's Canada? Canada are great people. I grew up in Minnesota. I love Canadians. Heck, they were like my neighbors. Sure. They were my cousins, actually, in a sense. We used to go up there all the time. The great people of Canada is very simple. They're great people. Their leadership under Trudeau was lacking the character and integrity in the capitalistic markets, and he was leaning towards socialism at its finest, which is not a person with the kind of character and integrity that gives the people the value of the position he held. He should be lowering the regulatory environment, lowering the tax base, and he should have been making more effort for small businesses to thrive instead of dive straight down into this quagmire of overburdensome environment of government red tape. So when Canada tries to flex their muscle, Canada's economy is a quarter of California's, less population. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all bad up there. Their Conservative Party is a fabulous party, but the Liberal Party is terrible. These people just have no clue what they're doing, because they think that the revenues of small businesses forever, even if they put 80% tax rates, and when you do the tax rates that are currently are 50, 60% on top of the regulatory environment, it's the cost burden and the taxes probably equal 70, 80% of somebody's annual profit. Certainly, it's close to it, if not right at the money, based on what we look at. And so Canada, it tries to flex their muscle. Go flex your muscle. Here's the problem. What muscle do you have against a $30 trillion economy when you've been stealing $40 billion a year in trade deficit? You've been allowing cheap steel and aluminum to come into your country from China through predatory selling back into America, and you're doing it and you're allowing it at artificially low rates to hurt our manufacturing industry. Trump's like, no more. No more of that kind of stuff. So Canada better get with the program quickly, because if they don't, what's going to happen is their economy is going to go to zero, not in a literal sense, but certainly it's going to be hurt, because who makes Canada who they are? We do. We make China. We make Canada.
We got to go.
Europe.
I'm so sorry. We're almost out of time. Christian Briggs, Hard Asset Management. Alex McFarland, thanks for listening. Blessings, prosperity for you all. Stay true to God and our country.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.